far, far greater than any storm will ever face. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read this Sunday at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us.
Guest today is Margaret Cohn, and she is an attorney in Washington, D.C., but more importantly, she's one of our nation's experts on the relationship between the Catholic Church and the Holy Land, and in particular, into how that relationship relates to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Margaret Cohn has advise members of Congress and two presidents, Bush and Obama, and their staff on issues concerning the Catholic Church, Catholic social services, and the Holy Land. And she's been active in a religious dialogue since 2004 and created a important groundbreaking program, the World Leadership Program for Emerging Religious Leaders from the United States and Al-Azhar in Cairo. Margaret has been named an advisor to the Bilateral Permanent Working Commission between the Holy See and the State of Israel. Margaret, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you very much, Dale.
You know, Margaret, one thing that you have led the discussion on, what discussion there has been, is the role of Catholic social services institutions in the Holy Land, in particular in the occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza. You know, why is this something, first, that's important? And secondly, why do you think it's something that's been overlooked in the discussion?
I'm glad you first started this conversation with that topic. I know we discussed maybe 6 weeks ago. We had a history, and we discussed generally the importance of Catholic social institutions. But I think it really plays out in this last conflict between Gaza and the State of Israel. I'm not sure if I sent you a copy, but you, most likely you've seen it. It was the Sisters of St. Joseph's in Jerusalem Hospital. They were getting victims of the conflict in Gaza sent over for treatment.
All the way from Gaza to Jerusalem?
Yes, yeah. And you know how difficult that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, Caritas, which does run institutions in Gaza, was aware of all the injuries, and these were, you know, life-threatening injuries. And they arranged to have these people evacuated and then sent over, and they were taken care of by the Sisters of St. Joseph. In the situation with Gaza, where there were hospitals obviously overcrowded, hospitals that had been damaged, you know, electricity was taken out, water, just the basic things you would need, there was nowhere for these people to get treated. Because they were Palestinian and they had these Gaza, quote-unquote, papers, because you know those papers really don't get you to go anywhere, Caritas intervened and was able to bring those, you know, young Palestinians out of Gaza and to be treated.
Well, since there were over 1,000 casualties, there must have been as many injuries.
There were more injuries. Actually, I have that number because I was really, really surprised. Let me get what I read today in the paper. Okay, they said There were 1,800 casualties, almost all civilian, and they said there were at least 20,000 injured. Now, that goes from, you know, just being caught in between snarples. What is that called?
Shrapnel fire.
Yeah, thanks. Minor injuries, so to speak, to very serious injuries. And anyone who was seriously injured, Caritas intervened, got through, you know, again, Caritas is paying for this. And then they were housed at Sisters of St. Joseph. And I'm sure now with the ceasefire, or the, you know, hopefully the ceasefire.
You know how many casualty victims were taken all the way to Jerusalem?
I just know it's the five. I'm sure there are more. I know you know this. The Sisters of St. Joseph's or any of those social institutions don't do press releases. They don't get on Twitter. You don't have a Facebook page. These sisters, well, you know what I'm saying? They're not out for, you know, they're very, you know, you know that. You know, you know them very well. So
they just get the work done.
They just get the work done. Yeah. What do we have to do? Get it done. They never brag about what they do. They never talk about it. They just roll up their sleeves, and they do whatever has to be done. And that's it. And they don't ask questions. You have someone, you know, that's injured. You let them come into the hospital, and you treat the person. That's it, period. And, again, they do not discuss this. And, actually, the Latin patriarch doesn't. All the religious orders are part of a larger order. They do not. As I said, they don't get on Twitter and talk about how many people have come in that they've treated.
But yet, this is an example of the kind of role the Catholic social service institutions play in the Holy Land, in the occupied territories, and how they come into play in the conflict with Israel.
Yes, it was also interesting as well, as obviously we have, you know, Catholic social institutions in Israel, in Jerusalem, the Israeli part of Jerusalem. And the sisters have had a long presence there. And in particular, one of the hospitals, it started in the early 1980s, was the first hospital that was willing to treat AIDS patients. It turned out no hospital in Palestine or in Israel would treat the patients. But the sisters, you know, in keeping with their vows, said, yes, no, bring them here. We'll take care of them. And so that's a unique role they also play. They don't have to get involved with some of that local politics. They have a very, you know, defined mission, which is to take care of people. They view it to be, you know, the role model, obviously, was Jesus or is Jesus. And Jesus wouldn't, in their mind, Jesus wouldn't turn you away if you, you know, had AIDS or HIV. So the sister said, bring him here. We'll take care of him.
Well, how much has their various ministries been impacted by, for example, the imposition of a security fence, which is really more of a wall, through the entire region?
The wall, the security barrier, however you want to define it, has separated the social institutions from many of their hospitals, many of the people that they serve. They view themselves very committed, in particular, to the Palestinians because they can't be treated at the Israeli hospitals for the most part. There are exceptions. It has to do with insurance. And there are times which the Hadassah hospital has been very generous to some of the infants that were at the creche who had life-threatening
injuries. Remind people what the creche is in Bethlehem.
Yes. The creche is...
No, excuse me, in Jerusalem, yes.
No, the creche is in Bethlehem with the Holy Family Hospital with Sister Sophie. The creche is an institution, probably the most advanced hospital serving in the West Bank. It is run by donations from the Knights of Malta.
Right.
Right. They have there also a nursery and orphanage for young abandoned children sometimes. More likely a situation where a family, the mother's pregnant, she doesn't have a job, the father doesn't have a job, and they have to give the baby to the creche. And so in that case, the sisters oversee, you know, all the children. And that's a very important role because with the you know, security barrier, there are times when you can't get medication in. You cannot get food in. I know there was a situation, it's in Bethlehem, and it had to do with bringing in equipment for people who were disabled. And you have to first bring it through a couple port cities in Israel. It may sit there for 2 or 3 months. Oftentimes, the fees that are required of the hospitals or the social institutions to pay are so exorbitant they can't even accept the contributions. Many times, medications will have expired because it takes so hard to get them into the West Bank where many of the social institutions are working.
The social institutions then include medical, this orphanage for children. It includes help for the aged.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, there's in particular the French house that was run by Sister Marie Dominique, which was, I think you were there, Gil.
Yes, I was. I was actually sick there, and they took care of me.
Yes. Yeah. And they also, when I go there, which is often, they always provide, accommodations for me too, which is really generous on their part. Yes. And again, that home for the seniors, again, is all run by contributions.
But I think it had a part of the security fence dug right in the backyard through a very ancient olive grove, I understand.
What that was, and I think we discovered it together, that was further up on the Mount of Olives, because the way the security barrier went, it cut through, like on the quote-unquote Christian side of the Mount of Olives, and we have, orphanage there, and that was the Sisters of, I get confused.
They were also a French order.
The French order. It was the French, it would come to me. But they had also an orphanage there, and they had a playground. Unfortunately, the barrier was, cut through their property, and it put the schoolyard in a military zone, and they were not allowed, to use it or even use their backyard. So Sisters of, it'll come to me. But anyway, yes, and that created a serious problem because it could no longer function as an institution because they were prohibited. Not only did their backyard get destroyed, they weren't even able to use the playground for the children. It was, they needed that playground.
Were there any other institutes just put out of business by the security fence?
I don't think any of them would close. I think the only thing that would prohibit the sisters from closing would be if they absolutely had no money.
And no food. And no electricity or water.
Exactly. These sisters are, there's some Polish nuns who are also up on the Mount of Olives. These sisters cannot be intimidated. They just say, we're going to do what we have to do, get out of our way, and we're going to take care of our kids, and we're going to take care of the sick. And, they're very well known, anyone who deals with them. They have that reputation among anyone who deals with them. So the security barrier, they would do the best they could. They would manage, right? And, we've seen how they accommodate. No, they would not stop for that reason. They would keep going. As difficult as it is, and it, adds 4 hours, 5 hours to their day, they continue to go.
It adds that time because it takes that much time to get through the security checkpoints.
They have to always also go way around, right? Before they would be able to leave on the Mount of Olives, you would cut right through, you would go to Abu Dis, within a short time you would be in the West Bank. Well, with the security barrier, you can't do that anymore, so they have to go all around, and it takes about 2 hours. And so it adds 4 hours to your day, back and forth.
And I take it that these institutions are not part of your average Catholic's tourism experience when they go to Jerusalem or the Holy Land.
Well, my only sense would be because the Knights of Malta run the Holy Family Hospital.
Yeah.
when I'm there, I do see many knights from Europe volunteering. And, yes, that is the only place. Let me take them back. Also, in the senior home, there was once a young French girl and a German girl who were volunteering. But generally, I've never seen any American at any of the social institutions. And I've been to all of them, and I know most of the staff. So I don't think that I don't think most Americans even understand they're there because they're not on the main street. They're in their communities. And
are there any United States-based orders or religious doing work there on the West Bank?
Well, you would have, well, yes, the Jesuits. There's some American Jesuits there. They're teaching. I don't know. I don't think the Sisters of Mercy. They're mainly European orders.
Well, they've been there for so long.
Exactly. Exactly. There's been a long history. And, you know, until probably the last 40 years, the French diplomatically had always kind of overseen the Holy Land and always, you know, was kind of unofficial sponsor for all the religious. And so, but that obviously has shifted as the conflict changed once the State of Israel was created, and it shifted really to the United States. And for a whole range of reasons, and perhaps it's just lack of knowledge, we haven't had much involvement.
My impression, though, is that the American bishops are aware of the importance that these Catholic, Orthodox, and other religious institutions play in ministering to the needs of Palestinians who are caught in the middle of this conflict.
Yes, yes. There is a group of bishops that come, and they're aware of it. In particular, you know, Cardinal McCarrick has been very involved for the last 15 years.
Who's going to take his place in terms of leading the effort there, though?
That's interesting because he, for a whole range of reasons, which, you know, didn't share with me, he became very involved in the whole issue of Islam, our relation as a person of faith. He had traveled to Iran, and he often, you know, went to the West Bank, went to Jerusalem. He has strong relations with the, you know, the rabbis in Israel. He's getting older. I am not sure. I'm not sure. I haven't seen anyone kind of, you know, poke their head up. It's not exactly something, you know, you do without a lot of thought. It's a very complicated, you know, problem, and very diplomatically.
Well, let's talk about education for a second, because in Bethlehem we have the Bethlehem University, which is, I think, still, am I right, still the only Catholic college in, at least in Israel or Palestine. I think there may be a Catholic college now in Jordan. Am I right?
Yes, yes, yes. The Latin Patriarch has, no, the Franciscans have an institution that they run. I want to go back and correct one thing. You were talking about American members of Congress or American political leaders. There was an incident, and I believe the year would be 2007, when there was a lot of discussion about a village in the West Bank called Abud. And it was run by Father Faras, who's a Jordanian priest, part of the Latin Patriarch. And at that point, the Israelis wanted to cut through Abud, and it would have destroyed the water supply, and it also would have destroyed, you know, the olive groves. And that is where, you know, the local community, you know, received their income. Father Faras came to Washington and testified in front of the House International Relations Committee.
Was it Chris Smith?
Yes. Chris Smith was chairing that. And what was really, really, really powerful is Chairman Hyde came in when he was the first speaker, first witness, and he also spoke about this. So there was strong interest from both Henry Hyde and Chris Smith. And then also another with Abud, both are now Secretary of Defense Hagel and Senator Pat Leahy. When they were there on a quote-unquote CODEL, they had heard about the problems in Abud and met with Father Faras. They do as well. There are some of the institutions who have a good relationship with our embassy in Jerusalem, and our consulate in Jerusalem. And they keep them apprised. And I know the consulate does like to monitor these problems. And there's been incidences in their annual report about religious freedom that they do have, they have named some of these incidents and talked about them.
Well, did Father Faraz get the result he wanted?
I don't believe I would say he got the result he wanted.
There was still barrier still was built through Abood?
There were some minor adjustments. The problem is, and Father Faraz was very active in trying to, help this community, is that unless there is someone holding, the Israeli government feet to the fire, like no other, like every situation, the minute you leave, it's hard to enforce. Going back to the children's home on the Mount of Olives, Henry Hyde had wrote a very strong letter to the Secretary of State, Condi Rice, and in it he talked about the destruction of this orphanage, and he talked about how the Israeli government was going to destroy, really the likelihood of this surviving because of the location of the barrier. At that point, it did, get across to the Israeli government, and there had been a gap. So you'd go on the Mount of Olives on the Christian side, and you'd see this big wall, but there'd be this big gap, right? And, wow, what is that? Well, it turned out that was the space on the sister's property that Henry Hyde told them, you cannot build on this part of the wall. Unfortunately, Henry Hyde died the very end or beginning of 2008, and within a week after Henry Hyde had passed away, the Israelis began construction on the grounds, and now, there's the wall.
But there's no gap anymore.
There's no gap, no. They closed that gap very quickly after, the chairman died. And so we urge the state of Israel to do certain things, but you can't be on them every month monitoring it.
Well, they would argue that the barrier has been very successful keeping out terrorists and their violent acts, and that even though it imposes an incredible burden on Palestinians, that Israel has a right to defend itself.
In the instance of the barrier, yes, a society, a state, has the right to defend citizens. The problem, though, with the barrier, it's the route of the barrier. And Israel has not drawn the barrier on quote-unquote borders. It decides what the borders are. And in the process, it's it's by itself deciding what the...
Unilaterally, yes.
Thank you. He decides the borders. So in this case, they have taken over property that doesn't belong to them. And so they're not doing it on their lines. So that's the problem. And they decide in their mind what they think is best. And what I've observed is that it appears the route of the barrier goes and encompasses land that is, the most quote unquote beneficial. There's a lot of water on the land. There's these aquifers. And so when you look at a map of the geography and where the aquifers are,
what they call the facts on the ground, right?
Facts on the ground. Well, you look and you realize that if you trace where the water supply is, that's pretty much how Israel decides where the barrier went. So what they have done is taken land that's not theirs, that has all the water supply, and said, oh, we need this for security. But it just, as I said, there's no explanation except in my mind that it follows the route of the water. And as you know, water is probably the biggest issue in the Middle East.
The long-term impact of the barrier, because it was my observation when we were there, we've been there several times, is that most of the sisters and brothers working there were elderly. Are these institutes going to not just be able to survive the barrier, but survive the fact that so many are elderly and or reach a point where they no longer can serve?
Well, as you know, Sister Sophie, left the crush about 2.5 years ago.
After what, was close 40 years, 50 years?
Yeah, she was 85. Though Sister Sophie wanted to stay, but the order brought her back. Said, no, you have to. No, Sister Sophie. Yes, when you look at the age of the religious in the Holy Land, you do think, how can we get, there's not young people coming in, right, to be sisters and priests. That is a huge problem. It's probably a problem in every kind of poor, area, right, this lack of religious. What is a crisis in particular, though, is that historically these institutions represented the teachings of Jesus, and that's why they want to be in the Mount of Olives, to live through and be like Jesus. And so how they'll manage that, I'm not sure. Again, I don't know if lay people would have the kind of dedication that the sisters and the priests have there. It's hard to know. I'm sure there's a lot of discussions with the leadership of these orders.
Are there many lay people going in and volunteering in places other than the Church of the Holy Family?
There were some volunteers at the senior home with Sister Marie Dominique in Abu Dhabi, but not many, no. But I said, they may have young people for a month or a week or something. I found, Europeans in their 50s and 60s may take a holiday, but they're doing things like I observed with a crush, feeding babies. I mean, they're not managing the hospital. They're not managing, making sure there's food. They're not running the place. They're there, just to assist and give some reprieve to the sisters.
I'm talking with Margaret Cohn, an expert on matters Catholic and the situation in the Holy Land and the conflict between Israel and Palestine. We've been talking about the unique and important role that Catholic social institutions play there. We'll continue this conversation after this message.
On Par for Life is hosting the third annual golf outing and dinner benefiting Arbor Vitae Women's Center. Join us Monday, August 11th at the prestigious Barton Hills Country Club, one of Michigan's premier golf facilities. Arbor Vitae Women's Center empowers women facing unplanned pregnancies to make life-affirming choices. Registration deadline is Thursday, July 31st. Play golf or have dinner and drinks. Learn more and register by visiting onparforlife.com or call Iris Proctor at 734-994-8863.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part from our day sponsor, in memory of Faraj Kashat, who went to be with the Lord 2 years ago today. He was a wonderful father, loved by all, especially his 14 grandchildren. He and his wife, Tatia, brought 6 children into this world. He is still loved and will always be in our hearts.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. We just sponsored our first conference, Catholic Witness in a Nation Divided. Session topics included immigration, pro-life witness, religious liberty, and redefinition of marriage. Speakers, aside from our own Al Creston, Teresa Tomeo, included Deal Hudson, the USCCB's Kevin Appleby, Father Frank Pavone, Notre Dame's Gerald Bradley, Dick Thompson, and William May. Individual CDs are available, and the 6 CD set is $57. An MP3 CD of the conference is $32.50. All editions of Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and More to Life are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs that are $9.50 each, including sales tax and postage. To place your order for one of these titles or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
I'm talking with Margaret Cohn about the role of Catholic institutions in Palestine. We've been talking mainly about an area close to Jerusalem, really part of Old Jerusalem, called the Mount of Olives. But we want to turn our attention to Gaza now. And is there the same situation in Gaza? Are there important Catholic social services there as well?
If I could just add one point, Dale. We were discussing the volunteers from Europe that come.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was hoping there might be a way that we could encourage young American Catholics to go over, work at some of these social institutions. They do have accommodations. Like I know it's a crush. There's places you can stay. Obviously very modest. But I think in order for them to understand the conflict, understand the situation with the institutions, and also to be have a spirit with their faith, there's nothing like being in Bethlehem.
Right. Well, you know, I don't want our listeners to not understand that you and I have a long history of going to the Holy Land together. And so we know a lot of these institutions, and we know the possibilities there. So I think that's a great idea, and I think you and I should sort of form a apostolic partnership here and actually create slots in specific social service institutions and get out there and offer this possibility to young Catholics or any Catholic who wants to go over and give some of their time doing this important work and also seeing for firsthand what it's like to live on the ground there.
I did have as well a very good friend of mine from college. She's a oral surgeon. She's Jewish. We went, we traveled often together. We went into the West Bank, and she volunteered as well. So there's very much the sense of giving, and if there's listeners who are not Catholic, the social service institutions are very happy to have them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, if anybody's listening right now and would like to volunteer, spend some time in Jerusalem or in Gaza, if we can get you in, very difficult, working with the poor, with children, with those who are sick and vulnerable, any of these groups, just email me at deal@avemaria.com, and I will put you in touch with Margaret, and we can make it happen. I'll repeat my email here a couple of times before the show is over if you didn't get a chance to write that down. So we could actually, I think, between the two of us, put together a very effective program and actually start filling in some of the gaps that are obviously existing there with the retirement of a lot of the religious.
And another thing, if there are some people who are not comfortable, perhaps, in the healthcare field or don't feel they have the skills, one of the jobs I first did when I was there is that I'd go back and forth between Bethlehem and Jerusalem because it was very difficult for the sisters to wait the 4 hours to go. Let's say they had to pick up a sister at the hospital, at the airport, or if they had to get certain medications. So basically, you become like a runner for the sisters. And then
you might learn to ride a motorcycle like our friend Helmut.
Yes. Yes.
By the way, my email is actually dhudson@avemaria.net. dhudson@avemaria.net. And I will put you in touch with Margaret Cohn, and you can do some work in the Holy Land. Obviously, you're going to have to cover your own expenses getting there and getting back. But while you're there, we can probably, I think very likely, get you a place to live free of charge and basically take care of your basics. Wouldn't you say that could happen, Margaret?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And again, as I said, there's the kind of quote-unquote going through the checkpoints. And then there was even, I know there are some minor, little odds and ends around the house, if you know how to use a hammer. It's very basic. Well, really, isn't that what it is?
Oh, I know. I mean, you are living off the land there, for sure.
Yes, yes. So if someone says, oh, my God, the door, the nail, okay, the next thing you know, you've got to figure out how to get the hammer. I mean, it's good because you're very resourceful and you figure out how to get things done.
I'm talking with Margaret Cohn about Catholic social services in Holy Land, and she suggested spontaneously that we could perhaps put the word out among American Catholics that these volunteer opportunities can be made to exist for sure through Margaret's efforts. So once again, my email is dhudson@avemaria.net, and if this strikes you as something you want to look into for yourself or somebody you know, shoot me an email. Now, back to the question of Gaza.
Well, maybe one point, though, because I know parents might worry about having a, you know.
Oh, absolutely they will. Go ahead with that.
First of all, as an American with an American passport, you are treated well. I mean, you'll go back and forth to the checkpoint. You are not bothered. So any of that inconvenience, which most people have, even many Europeans, you don't get with an American passport. The Israelis, when you come into the airport, they're, you know, very respectful, number one. So I want to understand that there are hardships, but because we carry American passport, we don't experience that. And number two, especially after what we've just seen the last 3 weeks, I can see if you're a parent and you didn't understand or realize on the ground, I would never have let my child go. I have a nephew who wants to be a doctor. In fact, he goes to school at the University of Michigan, which is where Ave Maria is, and I thought it would be a really good idea for Paul to go to the crash or the Holy Family Hospital. I thought his father was going to have a heart attack. Like, what are you talking about?
Right, big difference between going to Gaza and going to Bethlehem.
Yes, yes. You can't even compare the situation. I mean, you're still living, yes, there's the occupied territories. You have all those issues. You have to go through checkpoints, number one. Number two, if there's random attacks or violence, they don't. It's not going to happen to you as an American. You find on both the Israeli side, for the most part, in the Palestinian side.
No, you will meet some of the greatest people in the world that you'll ever meet in your life. Oh, they're just fantastic people.
Yeah, I mean, I have wonderful Israeli journalists and families. They watch out for you. And
absolutely. They're glad you're there.
Yes, yes. And they like, you know, most of them, especially the people that these young Americans would be meeting, do speak English. They've traveled often to the United States. And, yes, and they're very, very decent people on both sides. And so it's not where they're going to kind of be on their own, you know, left to the evils. And there's also so many foreigners with all the UN agencies, all, you know,
It's the cross. What do you want to say? The melting pot of the entire world, and it's historically, going back through recorded history, the place in which the worlds of the West and the East meet. It is the cross point, the crossroads of the world.
So I do want to make sure parents aren't thinking, oh, I'm not letting my kid go over there. And I do understand the concern. I mean, if I hadn't been there so many, I've been there 10, 15 times, I might feel the same way.
Well, by the way, Margaret, you asked me if I have ever been to Gaza because, you know, I had the opportunity to go with the late journalist Robert Novak when he and I went, I think, on our first trip over there. Well, we were sitting at a table with my daughter Hannah when this subject came up at Bethlehem University with members of the faculty who on a weekly basis went back and forth to Gaza. And when they heard I was going to Gaza, there had been some recent difficulty there, they turned to me and my daughter and said, don't let your dad go to Gaza.
Yeah.
I didn't get to go to Gaza with Robert Novak. Because she was freaked out by what they said.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember. And then, what is the name of your son? You have a little boy,
Chip Cyprian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says, "Dad, you can't do that. Take a Chip." Oh my! And she was like, "Well, you can imagine here. She's, you know, my dad's going to get killed going."
That's exactly what she said. Think of Chip.
Nope,
he needs you. Yeah.
I remember that. But
I wish I had gone to Gaza because it was probably my only chance.
Well. What was funny, I mean, I think you recall when Bob Novak came back, we had to go through, you know, all the dog and pony show, getting them in there with the security. I had let our consulate know, oh, by the way, on such and such a date, we'll be going, you know, Bob Novak's going to be going to Gaza. Because I figured, you know, let everybody know. Everything I do is very transparent, you know, everything's out in the open. And what happened is obviously the military commander of the Israeli Defense Forces knew that Bob Novak was going to be there. They didn't know, obviously, his itinerary. He was, you know, he was going to meet with some of the Catholic schools and some of the priests. So they made a decision that day that Bob Novak was in Gaza, they were not going to bomb. And so basically, Bob got a bomb-free day in Gaza. And so we laughed about that. I said, well, I guess we get more people, more influential people need to kind of go over there because that prevents the Israelis because they knew if they, you know.
I don't think you or I would earn a bomb-free day in Gaza,
but we
can try it.
No, I did go. I did get in.
By the way, we did take Congressman Chris Smith up to Bethlehem University down that trip, and it was the first time a member of the U.S. Congress had ever been to that, you know, that very important university in Bethlehem.
Yes. As you know, the U.S. government prohibits members of Congress unless they have a delegation and they have security.
I guess we kind of slipped that one in.
Well, very much. Well, that's because, you know, Chris got into the van of our friends, Monique and Helmut. And so they met them, and then they're in the back, and Helmut and Monique go back and forth all the time, right, between Bethlehem and Jerusalem. All the security people on the Israeli side know them. So they look in the back. They see a couple more Americans. Oh, that's fine. The next thing, they didn't even ask for Chris's, you know, passport.
Because
he wouldn't have had a... Yeah, he would have had a diplomatic passport. But because, again, this is why I want parents to understand, when you do this work, you do go back. They let you go through back and forth. You know, they trust you. There's an element of...
You're going through heavy iron gates is what people need to know.
Yes, yes. But, again, you're not going to have a problem with American passports.
And Bethlehem, by the way, a lot of tourists are discouraged and even barred by their tour guides from going to Bethlehem, saying that it's too dangerous, which is complete nonsense.
Yes.
Complete nonsense. And it's extremely sad that Christian tours, more evangelical than Catholic, the pilgrims are being denied the opportunity to go to the city where Jesus was born. So, again, can I ask you the same question for the third time?
Yes, sorry.
Are there Catholic social services in Gaza?
Yes, sorry.
Talk a little bit about the priest, the Catholic priest in Gaza that you've been talking to me about.
Let me just explain to your listeners. There's a reason why we have to explain some of this, and I keep emphasizing it, because there's so much misinformation. And so I want people to really understand when I make a suggestion, it's coming from a lot of experience. This is on the ground, observing, having relationships, you know, with not only Catholic institutions, but obviously the Greek Orthodox.
But you've been going over there for 20 years, haven't you, Mark?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I do know, I wouldn't go now, you know, there wouldn't be a lot to do. I would always tell someone, try to avoid July and August. There's some few rules that I've learned over time. But there are trustworthy people that you can depend on their, you know, views who know the ground, and they'll give you good advice. So
yeah, and in the case of what you and I are scheming to do here, you're in very, very good hands with Margaret, who knows everybody. My main role will be to get that word out there and using the platforms I have in both radio and in print. So we'll and also we can probably get Raymond Arroyo to help us at EWTN as well.
But again, there's wonderful Israelis. There's wonderful, you know, people and, you know, Palestinians. You know, there's a lot of warmth as well. So I want to be clear about the people on the ground that you meet. You're not going to, most of the time, you know, you're never involved with the diplomacy.
No, people in both, I've had nothing but wonderful experiences with both Palestinians and Israelis. The similarity is a tremendous warmth, affection, mm-hmm. a great hospitality. It's intense often, but you definitely meet people and make friends very quickly.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. But actually, probably nowhere else I've ever traveled, really. I mean, I've traveled a lot often.
No, the only place I've gotten that level of hospitality is in Ireland, Scotland.
Yeah, good point. Right.
When you get out of the cities, when you get off into the hinterlands.
I agree. Yes, it's the same. Right, right.
Yeah.
But in Jerusalem, you do get that. Everyone's talking. I mean, there's a lot of push and pull. And, you know, so and it's a small place. You know, you're right on top of each other. You kind of do have to figure out the, you know, the everyday, especially if you really want to, you know, live your life there, too. I mean, so, you know, as I said, there's wonderful people. I've never felt threatened. I always felt safe. Anyway, so I just want to be very clear, you know, that again.
Can we go back to Gaza now?
Yes, we'll go back to Gaza, yes.
Okay, well, I think the first thing to get in, to get on the record, because we have, you know, 10 minutes left to talk, is the situation. Is that the only Catholic parish in Gaza?
Yes, it's a large Catholic parish.
Do you recall the name?
I want to say St. Joseph.
And the priest is... been in communication with some of the, I think, Catholic News Service.
Yes.
About
right.
the impact of this bombing on the parish, on the people he knows.
He's, as far as from the quote-unquote religious perspective, any media person, myself, he's pretty much the go-to person, like what's going on, what's happening. So he keeps people apprised. Very reliable as information, because, you know, in the Middle East, you never know the reliability of anything. You know, the rumor mill, you never know. It's always kind of fun to kind of...
Father George Hernandez
okay.
at Holy Family Church.
Oh, Holy Family Church.
I wonder how a Latino priest got to Gaza.
He has to be new. I used to know when he was...
Father George Hernandez in Zaytun. It's
so
a town in Gaza.
City. Right.
And he's talking about the fact that he's taking care of 30 handicapped people and children and 9 elderly. And he's supposed to be able to rush them in and out when bombs start falling.
Right. Well, what happened is that there's probably, I heard, there's almost like 1.8 million people in
yes.
Gaza. And Gaza
yeah.
is probably the capital part of Gaza.
It's 141 square miles.
Yes. It's about like a size and a half of D.C., but not all of that area, the Palestinians are able to live. There's a huge border on the Israeli border between, like, when you walk to the checkpoint.
Yeah, 31-mile border.
Yeah, so they're very, very tight and very cramped. So I understand that over, like, 300,000 people have lost their homes through this. And what they had...
Wow.
Is that, oh, the whole place is just, I mean, demolished. Everything is destroyed.
Did they ever turn on the electricity and water that they had turned on?
No. No, they still have problems. No, it's not working.
So they've gone for a week without water and...
Yes, yes, yes. That's not unusual. I mean, part of the...
I know that happened in Bethlehem on one of my trips, that the water got turned off for a week.
Right.
In Bethlehem.
Well, because, you know, they're dependent the way the Israeli, you know, like... I'll give you an example. Israeli government's going to bomb your house, okay? They have your phone number because they know every cell phone because you have to go through Israel because they don't allow their own independent satellites. So every telephone call is monitored by the state of Israel. So you're on your phone going along, right? And the next thing you know, you'll get this text. You know, this is the IDF. Leave your home. Right?
Tell people what the IDF is.
Oh, the Israeli Defense Forces.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, here you are, your life, and then, you know, as I said, they have your number. They know they can get to all the cell phones, and they'll just send out a message to everybody. We're going to be bombing X, Y, and Z. And you basically have 5 minutes. But it would be like our government. If they could get our cell phones and, like, say, from where I live now, my city, you know, they'd have all our numbers. They would control it. And whatever they wanted, you could, you know, little text from your government telling you, well, we're going to turn off your water, we're going to come to your taxes, whatever. I just thought that was, you know, just so different from our lives, you know, that we would have, the government would know that and could even be exposed. They use, you know, your telephone number. So it's a very strange place how it functions. It's a very odd place anyway. But I want to add that because I just read that. Couple of days ago, and I thought that is unbelievable. They even know your cell number, and then when they're going to bomb you, they'll send you a text. get out of the place, 5 minutes you have. And that's basically it. They give them 5 minutes.
Well, and if you're dealing with handicapped children and the elderly, that's not going to get you very far.
You don't go anywhere. In fact, I think I share with you an article, and there was international cry. There was a UN school.
That was officially criticized by the American government.
There was the harshest criticism that I've ever seen. So last Sunday, and it created a big, big media story, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, bombed a UN school.
Which then the Obama administration publicly criticized in very direct terms.
Let me explain to the listeners. UN buildings, churches, schools, that's off limits. That's off limits. You do not attack. You never attack civilians, and you don't go after hospitals or schools.
But yet nearly 1,800 civilians have died.
Well, yes. Well, that is why everyone has wanted Israel to, the civilian casualties. But going back to this UN, but in particular, because the Israeli government knows every square foot of, what is what, on the ground.
And who's there and who lives there? Or whose business is there? Everything.
I think you remember when we began with Bob Novak, we were meeting with some Israeli officials and some people in the media, and they had that PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah.
They were going over different areas in the occupied territories in the West Bank and Gaza. They would know, there's a slight, a ditch there. I mean, the detail. And Bob Novak looked at them and said, "You've got to be kidding me."
I mean, I remember the look on his face. I mean, when you can surprise a man as veteran as Bob Novak, you really surprise somebody.
Well, and then he even commented after when we left, he said, "Did you believe? Can you see what they have?" I mean, and this was like 2007, and I mean, it was so high tech. I mean, they could, go down and you get to the smallest area, and you're thinking they know everything.
Okay, here's what I need you to do, Margaret. In one minute, give our listeners, say, two or three examples of the kind of volunteer opportunities we could possibly funnel them into.
Again, what I would do, there's many social institutions, and depending on the person's, experience, as I said, for my nephew who wants to be a doctor, you could see so much there if you were in the West Bank. Even dealing, yes, obviously trauma, but a local small hospital will deal with issues that normally a local small hospital wouldn't deal with. But they have to because they have this pool of patients, and they can't go anywhere else. So you'll get a very interesting experience, number one. You can work at any of the institutions, just even when you maintenance work. I was feeding babies.
You could be the driver.
Going back and forth. Yeah. And, many times, of course, there's a significant number of religious that do work in the West Bank, and also Jerusalem, and also all throughout the state of Israel as well.
Again, I want to give my email to anyone who is interested, dhudson@avemaria.net, and I'll immediately connect you with Margaret Cohn. I'm assuming there's also an opportunity to work with the elderly, to work with children, to work in education, or even at the orphanage in Bethlehem.
Yes. And even what also I found for me was also to combine it for Holy Week. Nothing can become richer than to do some of the service. And there's also, obviously, you don't have to all the time be in a church. And sometimes being, quote-unquote, praising God or being a good Catholic is also giving service. So I've always liked to combine any of my, religious pilgrimages also with services when I go there. It makes it deeper. You will have a different experience than your typical pilgrim.
Thank you, Margaret. We've come to the end. Margaret Cohn, Washington, D.C. attorney, but also a great apostolic minister to the Holy Land, especially to Palestinians. Thank you for being my guest on Church and Culture.
Thank you, Dale.
And again, those of you that are interested in volunteering to work over there, write to me at dhudson@avemaria.net. And for all the listeners, please come back after this short message. We're going to talk to another very interesting person about his attempts to relieve some of the tensions between Israelis and Palestinians in the Holy Land.
My journalistic integrity was questioned when I approached a story about 40 days of life and did not include what the accuser thought was a balanced view from the other side. The issue was that the other side didn't want to go on the record. See, there's a price to pay for speaking truth. But what is truth? The Bible teaches us that murder is wrong. The unborn is a person. Just read the Gospel of Luke. For behold, when the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby leaped in my womb for joy. And in Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I've appointed you a prophet to the nations. Therefore, we know it is wrong to murder the unborn. Yet, I'm still attacked for standing by the Word of God. So what would Jesus say today when the majority do not agree with me for defending Scripture? He would say, speak truth anyway. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Don Hagarmo, a communication evangelist. This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. The new evangelization announced by John Paul the Great is to convert the baptized, the sacramentalized, not the evangelized, and the many Christians at risk in our hostile culture. The decree on the laity tells us that we are to evangelize, sanctify, penetrate, and perfect the temporal order. In other words, by virtue of our baptism, we are missionaries sent to witness to the gospel in practical ways through our marriages, our openness to life, the way we conduct our businesses, the way we go to school, entertain ourselves through our political expression, and the way that we live out there. Is there enough evidence to convict us of being Christians? Let us tighten up our ships through conversion and repentance, through frequent use of the sacraments, and through a daily encounter with our living Lord Jesus Christ. Only then can we fulfill the missionary call on each of our lives and truly be part of the new evangelization.
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Light of the East. Weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, Benediction, Eucharistic Adoration, Daily Mass, the Rosary. Do these same devotions exist in the Eastern churches? The answer would be yes and no at the same time.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Funds Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo continues the catechetical series entitled RCIA for Catholics. It's a series for Catholic Christians who want to delve deeper into their faith. On this eighth program, we learn about the Church. It's not ours. It is His. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 7, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the answer.
Christ is the answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
It's time for